No, Ravon. Chassidish younger man like yourself. Not off to Miron. Hundreds and thousands of people from all around the world. Okay, we're here keeping the flame alive. Zok the Gemara. Lamed Hyomri. So we're trying to work out the Maila, as it were, of Yayin. We were told in the Mishnah that Yayin gets a special bracha. Why? We're not sure. Clearly, it's something to do with its chashivus. The question is, what exactly is the chashivus of Yayin? So we've so far had two suggestions, but both of them fell through. Suggestion number one was, it's chashuv because it's been upgraded from the fruit that it was extracted from. That turned out to be not true, because shemen is also an upgrade from the olive from which it was extracted, and the halacha is that shemen is borei pri ha'etz. That can't be the reason. Suggestion number two was, because yayin is zayin, zon, it sustains, as opposed to a regular fruit juice. That also fell through, because it turns out that shemen is also sustained. It might not be called a mozain. You don't make borei min mozainus on it, but it certainly sustains. So we still don't understand why is yayin treated with special status. So the Gemara says, Ella, we're looking for the Ella. This is on the third, last, medium width line. First word on the line, Mavorachim. Says the Gemara, Ella, we have to look for a new reason. And it must be Chamra, which is wine, Soid. What does Soid mean?
Satisfied.
Right, from the word Su'uda. We're not talking about whether it is Zayin, which means whether it has nutritional value, it's considered food, etc. Rather, it's Soid, which at this stage of the game we think means it fills you up. You can have a wine party. But you don't have an oil party. Umishcha loy soid. Oil, however, you wouldn't make a sud out of oil. It doesn't fill you up. So therefore, if you want to know why is it the wine has special status, it's because you can make a sud from it. Or at least soid. It fills you up. Says the Gemara, v'chamra misoid. Would one really make a suda? Does a suda, does a chamra, does yayin fill you up? V'harava, surely, Rava said, have a shasi chamri. He used to drink wine. Kol mali yoyma de pischa, all day, erev Pesach. Even though the mitzvah obviously is only to drink wine on the night of Pesach, he used to drink wine all of Erev Pesach. For what purpose? Ki heichi, so that denigrere lelibe, literally translated, it would draw his heart, it would give him an appetite. V'nechel matzah tvei, in that way you could eat more matzah. Now, what is the Gemara trying to prove from this? If by drinking more wine, you'll have more of an appetite, be able to eat matzah, then clearly wine does not fill you up. Because otherwise, it will produce the exact opposite result of what you're trying to achieve. So clearly, to the contrary, yayin does not fill you up, and it builds up an appetite. So how can you say that yayin is chashuv? Why? Because it satisfies you, can fill you up. It clearly doesn't. To the contrary, it doesn't fill you up. It makes you feel hungry. And that's exactly what Rava did on Erev Pesach. In order to feel hungry, is to be able to digest more matzah. So therefore, that theory doesn't seem to be true. Says the Gemara something which seems counterintuitive. Seems slightly paradoxical. What's the Gemara's answer? It depends how much wine you have. Tuva Gorir. What does tuva gorer?
A lot.
If you have a lot of wine, then what? Then it doesn't fill you up. That's the paradox over here. If you have a lot of wine, gorer, that drags you out, that draw makes you hungry. But purta, if you have a little bit, sorted, then fills you up. So again, does wine fill you up or it doesn't fill you up? It depends how much you have of it. If you have a lot of it, then what? It doesn't fill you up. And that's what Rava did on Erev Pesach. Rava ate a lot of wine or drank a lot of wine in order to give him an appetite. Had he drunk, paradoxically, only a small amount of wine, then what?
It would have filled him up
and then he wouldn't have done it. As we're about to see in Tosus, it would have been also to have done so. I don't know, the nutritionist, maybe the doctors can help me out on this one. But for some reason, it sounds a bit paradoxical to me. If you have a lot of wine, it makes you hungry, gives you an appetite. Small amount of wine fills you up. So if you want to know, again, why is it that wine has special status? It's because it fills you up, as long as you only have a small amount. If you have a lot of it, it'll make you hungry. Says the Gemara again. Tuva, gorir. Four words over here. Tuva, a lot. Gorir, gives you an appetite. Purta, small amount. Soid, fills you up. Says the Gemara, umi, soid, klal. Does wine really fill you up at all? V'hoksiv. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, it says, v'yayin yesamach levav enosh. And wine will gladden the heart of a man. V'lechem levav enosh yisod. But bread, however, will make the heart of a man what? Doesn't say rejoice.
Satisfied.
So the implication is, says the Gemara, Nahamo, what's Nahamo? Bread. Who? The soid. That's what fills you up. But Chamra? Lo soid. So how can you tell me that wine has special status because it fills you up? When in this passage, the opposite seems to be the indication that bread fills you up, but not wine. Says the Gemara, no. Elo Chamra Isbe Tarati. What does Tarati mean?
Two.
Chamra has two aspects to it. Soid Umasameach. When the Pasuk says that wine gladdens your heart and bread fills you up, it didn't mean that each one has one attribute that the other one doesn't. Rather, it means wine will gladden your heart in addition to filling you up, as opposed to bread will just fill you up, doesn't make you merry. But wine will. That's how the Gemara is saying it. Chamra is beitarati, soid umasameach. It's not mesameach only, it's also mesameach, but it also fills you up. But nahamo, bread, however, misad soid, it will fill you up, as bread does, but samuchi lo mesameach, but it doesn't gladden your heart. Nobody gets drunk on bread. Says Rashi, v'hoksi v'yayin yisamach levav enosh. V'sefer dekra, what is the end of that posuk? It says, v'lechem levav enosh yisod, quote unquote. What's the implication therefore? Mashma, if you tell me that wine gladdens, bread satisfies, the implication therefore is mashma aval yayin, wine however, einoy elo mesameach. The only thing it can do, we're assuming at this stage of the game, that each one only has one attribute. So if you say that wine gladdens, it means that wine only gladdens, but it doesn't fill you up. That's the implication. That's what it sounds like. Umashani, says Rashi, the Gemara answers that no. Lav kudaka omrad. It's not as you said that each one has one attribute. Rather, elo lechem yisod. Lechem will fill you up. V'lo yisameach. V'lo yisamach will not gladden the heart. Avol yayin will do both. It will be soyed. Umasameach. Okay, let's press pause for the moment and have a look at the bottom tesis. So Rava had this custom of drinking a lot of wine on Erev Pesach. Why? In order to build up an appetite for matzah. So we thought, sounds like it doesn't fill you up. The answer is, it depends how much you have. A little bit will fill you up. A lot of it will not fill you up. So the question is, we know that you have to come to Seder night with an appetite. That's halacha. The te'ovin. So the question is, are you allowed to drink wine, therefore, on Erev Pesach? Based on our Gemara, what will it turn out? Depends how much you drink. Says Tosfos, Mikan mashma, tuva gorir, mikan mashma. From here, the implication is, she'osa lishtois yayin be'erev Pesach. It will be also to drink wine on Erev Pesach, min ha-mincha ulamalo. From mincha and onwards, ve'imreitza lishtois. But if you want to drink, then tzorech lishtois harbe. The only way it will be permissible is if you drink a lot, the tuva, because if you have a lot of it, as the Gemara says, migra gorir. Now if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, Tofayin Aleph, Sif Aleph. Osar lechol pas. You're not allowed to have bread, misho asiris or lamalo, from the 10th hour on onwards on Erev Pesach, kadesha yechol matzah, lete ovain, in order that you should have matzah on an empty stomach. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you can have fruits, you can have vegetables, no problem, not too much. Says the Shulchan Aruch, v'yayin ma'at lo yishta. Don't drink a bit of wine, mishum de misad soid, because it will fill you up. Avalim rotzo lishtois yayin harbe. If you want to drink a lot of wine, shoysa, no problem at all. Not only is it no problem, it's perhaps even recommendable. How do I know it's recommendable? Because Rava did it. Because when you drink a lot, goyrer tavas hamaychol. What does goyrer tavas hamaychol mean? It actually drags out, builds an appetite.
It just sounds weird because it's supposed to stay up and do secretes with time and wine just it might wet your appetite, but also
put you asleep,
knocks you out, and makes you drunk.
The Mishnah Berurah asks your question. The Mishnah Berurah says that when it says if you have a lot, that's a good thing. Mikol Mokim says the Mishnah Berurah, and he's quoting over here, the Taz, Lo yishte kol kach. Don't drink so much. Until you literally can't move and you'd be so satisfied you can't eat anything. Because eventually, if you eat that much, if you drink that much, eventually will knock out any appetite. V'gam, and this is what you quoted, yuchal lehishtaker, will become drunk. V'yisbatel mitzvah yisalaylo. And that way the mitzvahs of the laila will all be nisbatel because you won't be able to keep them at all. So how much is called a lot? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Shtei koisos shel revius oy rubon yesh lach shev harba, he says.
That's not so much.
Just enough to put me to sleep.
Do that and dollar cuts. So what's a little then? Because that's
the Bir Halacha, which is also authored by the Chofetz Chaim, as we know, has a whole discussion about this. And he actually brings some Rishonim who disagree with Tosfos, and they say that any type of wine is okay, a lot or a little. And the Bi'alocha concludes as follows. Mistabra, logic would dictate, she'tolui ha'koil, it all depends, lefi teva oisei ha'odom. It all depends on the nature of that person, lefi ma'shehu margish benafshei. According to whatever he feels in his soul, dovor she'goyrer liber le'taivas ha'maychel oi le'hepach. As you mentioned, I personally know if I drink a cup of wine, Erev Pesach, that'll be out for the count. I'll enjoy Chol HaMoed. But some people can drink 6 cups of wine and they're unmoved. No, I'm Stolen Rosh Zelig, bottle and a half, no sweat. No?
My friends.
For your sure. Friends, okay. It's friends. Somebody called up the Rav and said, I have a rather embarrassing question, but it's not me, it's my friend. My friend asked me to ask the Rav, a Shaila. So the Rav said, is it you? He said, no, it's not me at all, it's my friend, but my friend asked me to ask you. So the Rav said to him, I don't understand. Why doesn't your friend just call me himself? And why doesn't he say to me, listen, I've got a Shaila, but it's not me, it's my friend who just asked me to ask him. Might sound a joke, but this happened to me last week. Somebody called me and said, I have a shaila, a bit of a delicate question. Someone did this, that, the other. And the husband asked the following, da da da. I said, if you don't mind me asking, I said, are you the husband? He said, no. So I said, well, how do you know about this question then? It sounds a bit of a delicate issue. How would you know about it? He said, someone asked me to ask you. So I have no problem with that essentially, but there were a lot of delicate details where I needed to ask the person who really was the questioner. So he said, you sure you're not the husband? No, it's a friend. So do me a favor, call up your friend and tell him he should ring me. Never heard from him again. Just from last week.
Very clever.
Question from last week. Okay. One of the more interesting questions. One of the other interesting questions I had this week. You can share this around the table. Somebody asked me, he said, I have a shaila in Cheshen Mishpat, says to me. Monetary issues. I said to him, I'm not really entitled, I'm not equipped to pass from a Cheshen, I haven't learned Cheshen Mishpat, so I can't really pass him. So, well, let me ask you anyway. Okay, what's the question? He said, this week, one night, I said the bracha on Sefiras HaOmer. Now, the Shulchan Aruch says that you should really know, you should have in mind, you should be clear at the time of the bracha what number you're going to count. Don't look for it afterwards or rely on hearing your neighbor. When you make a bracha, you should know what you're about to count. And he said, I didn't quite. The Mishnah says clearly, it's not ma'akev. So if you didn't know, you did hear your friend, or you eventually found the right one, it's okay. But lechatchila, you should know. So he said, I made a bracha, and then until I fumbled around, and eventually I found the right one, and I counted. I said, fine, good. He said, it took me a while between the bracha and the sphira. I said, what did you do in between the two? Did you talk, or did you... He said, no, not at all, I was just looking for the sphira. I said, it's fine, that's definitely called... You counted with a bracha, but I said, by the way, firstly, what's the difference? I mean, so this happened 3 days ago. Either way, you count it, and you're definitely allowed to continue counting with a bracha. So, firstly, why does it matter to you now whether 3 nights ago was it called counting with a bracha or without? He was worried you'd lost his bracha because it was too. I said, anyway, what's it got to do with Cheshen Mishpat? This is not a Cheshen Mishpat question, this is an Eira Chaim question. So he said, no. He said, my grandfather told you this?
I didn't tell
you
no, this. But I figured it was going somewhere.
He said, my grandfather offers $100 to any grandchild who counts the entire Omer with a bracha, $50 if you count without a bracha. So I need to know whether this is considered a sphere with a bracha or without. I said, tell your grandfather $100 and we'll go 50 each. You remind me of the story. I call good jokes, but it's got a musa to it. There was a killer who was looking for a rov. And you hear about this young Talmud Chacham, and they approach him and said, would you want to be our rov? So he says to him, listen, Oira Chaim, day-to-day shailas, ilchus and tefillah, and shabbos, and brochas, etc., and yom tov, that I think I can paskin. But chesh mishpat, I've never learned, and I'm not equipped to paskin. So you have to make a decision whether that bothers you or it doesn't bother you. So they considered it, they came back to him, no, it's fine, chesh mishpat's not that important. You don't normally have an urgent chesh mishpat shaila, we can always refer it onwards. The main thing is the rov knows Oira Chaim, and that basis you're the rov. Mazel tov, big rov, fine. First week in shul, the gabbai bangs on the bima. Mashiva ruach amorid agoshim. The other gabbai bangs on the bima. No, amorid at all. First gabbai bangs back. No, mashiva ruach. Second one, amorid at all. Mashiva ruach, amorid at all. Hold backwards and forth. Well, ask the rov. Mashiva ruach, amorid at all. That's certainly Oira Chaim. So we can ask the Rav. We say Mashiv Ruach, we don't say Mashiv Ruach. Big machlekes in the two gaboim. So they approach the Rav. No idea. So sort out yourselves. So after that, they approach him and said, what's going on over here? Deal's a deal. You said that Chesh Mishpat, you don't pass him, but Oira Chaim, you pass him. Said the Rav, this was not a question in Oira Chaim. Do you think these gaboim really cared whether you say Mashiv Ruach or Merid at all? That wasn't the discussion. You know what the discussion was? Which gabbai is the owner of the shul? Who's the boss? That's the real shayla. That's Chesh Mishpat. I already told you, don't pass me Chesh Mishpat. Sometimes you have to get to the crunch of the shayla. But I read just recently, in all seriousness, joking apart, I'm in the middle of reading a book about the Chabina Rav. The Chabina Rav was a Ga'ani Ga'inim. You read that book, you literally get dizzy. The Chabina Rav came from Europe. He was Hasidish, very Hasidish. And he came from Europe. He was incarcerated in the camps during the war. And he came to Eretz Yisrael after the war. And he passed away about, I think, in the 1970s, if I'm not mistaken. Mamash Ga'ani Ga'ini knew everything. Knew Kol HaTorah Kula. Just as an example, David, of literally, the stories about him were literally off the charts. When you hear a story like this, you don't know whether to laugh or cry. Two people came to the Chabina Rav, so they have a question, la halacha. So what's the question? The question is as follows. One of them says, I'm a store owner, and this other fellow is a regular client of mine. Now, whenever he buys things from me, small items, he doesn't pay me on the spot. Rather, I write it on the wall, next to my account in my store on the wall, and then the next time he comes in I write it again. Now next time, at the end of the month, we tally up, we look for all the different numbers with his name. That's what I do for everybody, and that's how much he owes me, and that's always been the arrangement. The problem is, he said yesterday we had some cleaning lady who came into the store and she whitewashed the wall and it's all gone. So we have no idea what to do. And the client's more than happy to pay, but we have no idea how much it is. Is it 30 shekel, 40 shekel, 100? We have no idea. So Chabina Rav said, it's fine, it's 67 and a half shekel. So how do you know? He said, I was in your store yesterday, and I noticed on the wall. A bit off the charts. That's not the story I wanted to tell you. The story I wanted to tell you was that there was a young Rav who was appointed to a shul. Become a Rav of a shul. And one of his first Shabbosos, they came up to him in the middle of davening, said, we have an urgent question. So what's the question? They said, some young baby was brought to the shul for whatever reason, and has had a bit of an accident, and the floor's become dirty around his place. The question is, now what do you do with regard to davening? Can you daven there? You can't daven there. There isn't pleasant smell, unpleasant smell. Kids, so what do you do? So Rav thought about it. He says, you should just cover it and leave it. Don't sweep it up or anything, clean it up, just cover it. So the gaboim of the shul were a bit put out. Because as far as they were concerned, they seemed to be pretty confident that halacha was that you can sweep it away. So they went to the Tribunal Rav, and they said, you know, we don't know what to do, we're a bit stuck. We appointed this young Rav, came with a very rich reputation, and he seems to have made a very basic mistake in a very simple halacha. Well, let's say, what was the shaila? Well, kid dirtied the floor, we're not sure what to do. We thought clean it up, and he says, cover it up. So on the spot, the Tribunal Rav says, psh, wow, what a Rav you have. What a phenomenal Rav you have. So they're a bit taken aback. They came to complain. He said, no, you have a phenomenal Rav. Your Rav was asked a question in Eirachayim. It's a question of Hilchas Tefillah. And he obviously knew the Lecha Mishnah on the Rambam in Hilchas Bias HaMikdash. And based on that, he paskened. Looked and said, well, what do you mean? He says, because the Rambam says in Hilchas Bias HaMikdash, this is the Tribunal Rav on the spot. The Rambam says in Bias HaMikdash, talks about a similar case, and the floor has been dirtied, and the Rambam says you should cover it. And the Lecha Mishnah there on the spot asks, why must you cover it? Surely the Rambam himself says elsewhere that if you have dirt in the house, you just sweep it up. So the Lecha Mishnah, for whatever reason, distinguishes between a house and a Beis HaMikdash, different halachas. A Bayis and a Beis HaMikdash. So Tribunal Rav says, wow, your Rav is incredible. You asked him a question, Erechaim, he obviously knew this Lecha Mishnah, and his suffix was whether Beis HaKnesses is like a Beis HaMikdash or is it like a Bayis? The Rav had no clue. The Rav didn't know any Rambam, the Rav didn't know any Lecha Mishnah. This was the Goyness of the Tribunal Rav. That's the way he would have approached the Shaila. That's where he protected the blushes of his young Rav. Okay, back to our Shaila. So we seem to have a bit of a discussion, but at least the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens is pretty clear. If you have a lot of wine, that might be well recommendable on Erev Pesach, although the Mishnah Berurah says within limits, not too much. If you have a little bit of wine, then that's not good because that will fill you up and you won't come into Leil Pesach with a taiva, with a desire, with an appetite to eat.
Then the Gemara says that the Rabbi drank all day. He says, call you not.
So he certainly drank a lot and he was able to take it.
So it's just a little bit for you throughout the whole day.
Maybe it was non-stop, but he was able to take it. Most people are not able to take it. Says the Gemara, Ihochi. We immediately apply the Ihochi rule. What's the Ihochi rule? Or the Imkain rule?
Immediately before what we've just
if
said.
If it's true what we just said.
If it's true what we just said, we have a question. I would never have had a question without what you just said. Nachum, you've ruined my whole moshel. So we used to say, if it's Thursday, it's away. Why are you wearing a blue shirt? That's not an imkain. You've just gone and ruined that, Nachum. So I have to think of a different motion.
Why are we a long sleeve shirt?
A long sleeve shirt, okay. If you asked a question, then you introduce it by saying, if this, then why that? Then the two have to be dependent on each other. So if the Gemara says, Ihochi, it means, based on the information that you just now told me, I have a question. What did you just tell me? You just told me that the reason why I make a bracha on yain, a special bracha, Borei Pri HaGafen, is because not only does it gladden your heart, but it fills you up. If it fills you up, says the Gemara, Ihochi, Navrich Olei, Shalosh Brachos, why don't you bench afterwards? To bench. It fills you up, so you just had a whole meal. Says Rashi, Ihochi, if so, the Zayin, it sustains you, Vesoid, and you, satisfied from you, satisfies you, then Mozoin who? So Lechaira has the absolute status of Mozoin, V'lavri choleo, Shalosh Brochois, and you should have to bench afterwards, three Brochois, La'acharav afterwards, V'anan, Amrinon, L'kamon, B'pirkin, and yet, we say later on in our perek that kol shu mishivas haminim, anything which is from the seven species, but v'loy min dogom, but it's not a species of grain. You just say one bracha. You do not say three brachas. Three brachas, by the way, means what?
Benching. So yeah, if you're only having, if you're having a lot of wine, then it's not. Then it could be a suffix there.
Okay, but at least if you have the requisite amount, fine. Says the Gemara, no, because loy kovi inshi seudosayu, a person would never be kiveya. What does kiveya mean? You'd never establish inshi, a person seudosayu, their meal ilave on it. In other words, if in theory you drink it, it might well fill you up and say, but it's not the norm. No normal person says, okay, what are we having for dinner tonight? Wine.
Not the ikar of the meal.
Therefore, it's not considered mozin as such. Mozin is the meal. This is not a meal. So it's not the normal thing to do. Says the Gemara immediately, okay. Omalei Rav Nachman by Yitzhak Lerova Ba'i Kova Ilave Sudasev. So if you did, you're telling me that I'm asking a theoretical question, a person doesn't do it. But if you did, if a person was Kiveya Sud on the wine, my, what's the halacha then? When Eliyahu Hanavi will come, Vayoyma, he'll tell us, I have a kviusa, whether you can consider that a kvius suda. By the way, this word kvius, we have to get very familiar with it because it's going to become one of the main words in this parak. Kveya suda. If you have a quick bite of a cucumber at home, it's not kveya suda. That means establish, sit down, a whole meal. So therefore he says, I don't know, you're asking a question which is irrelevant. Well, when your Novi comes, we'll worry about it, then he'll tell us whether it's called a kvias. Bahashta, now Mia at least, botlo daitoi eitzel kol odom. A very important principle. What does botlo daitoi eitzel kol odom mean?
The normal way. The normal way of people.
Yeah, but what does botlo daitoi mean? At the end of the day, if a guy would come to you and say, you can call me any name you like, but at the end of the day, I did drink a whole suda out of wine. What would you say? I would say, botlodaita. What does botlodaita mean?
His opinion is bottled.
His opinion is bottled. He did a crazy thing. Abnormal. We don't deal with abnormal people.
We had him sukkah.
Very good. The Gemara talks about if you have a sukkah which is very high and you want to now lower the level of your sukkah by raising the floor. So if you put straw or stones or gravel or earth on the floor, say this, you've raised the level of the floor. But imagine you'd put pillows on the floor. Well, I said, sorry, that doesn't raise the level of the floor. Why? Because in a few minutes you're going to take the pillows away. Says the Gemara, and what happens if he decides he wants to keep the pillows there and he's going to make it part of the floor? Says the Gemara, these are mashugana. Botladaita is al kaladam, that's not normal. Therefore, if we want to have the international definition of floor, we don't base our definition on people who are abnormal. Normal people don't make a floor out of pillows. This, by the way, is Noigeya Halocha Lemaisa every single day. When's it Noigeya? We have phone calls from time to time. Somebody just toveled in the mikveh. Nightmare scenario, she comes home and she sees she has something on her guf which might be considered a chatzitza, which renders the whole tvila null and void, and she's start all over again. So there's a one question in most circumstances that we would ask her, are you makpid? What does that mean, are you makpid? Are you particular about this thing? If she tells you, I detected a tiny piece of dirt, 1 millimeter in size at the back of my foot. Presumably you're not makpid, nobody's makpid, and therefore we can ignore it. What happens if she says, no, it's an enormous piece of dirt? I had a shite a few weeks ago, actually. Somebody knocked on our door Friday night, 10:30 in the evening, and said, my wife this morning, which is mamash neged halacha, my wife this evening went to the mikveh, and today she was busy with glue. She's against halacha. Halacha says, mafurish, that on the day that the woman goes to the mikveh, she should not involve herself with any sticky substances. It said she shouldn't do any kneading of dough, etc., etc. All right, she did it. We're after the event. Fine. She said that, he said she didn't come. He said that she got ready for the mikveh, is coming for the mikveh, and she's just spotted on her finger a piece of glue.
Afterwards?
Or? Afterwards. After the mikveh. She's just come home. Now, sometimes, and that's why chatzitza is very complicated, sometimes we'll have to work out, is there a possibility that this item only got stuck to her just this moment? But there's no way glue got stuck to her on Friday night, and you don't have to be Einstein to work out that if she messed about with glue today and she got glue on her fingers, and obviously she missed it when she prepared for the mikveh. Now, if we would be dealing with a tiny blob of glue, which is literally you can barely see, then maybe we can have a discussion. Are you makbid or you're not makbid? But on a size like this, a normal person doesn't want to be walking around with glue. It bothers them, either aesthetically or just feels uncomfortable if you take it off. That's called makbid. Now, what would be if she would say, you know what, I'm a strange woman. I couldn't care less if I have glue all over my hands. What would we say? That's abnormal. Most normal people do not want to have a piece of glue. The Shulchan Aruch specifically doesn't talk about glue, but I thought at the time it was Pashut, and I discussed with other Rabbanim afterwards, and they all agreed that no normal person wants a blob of glue stuck all over their fingers.
If she works in the glue industry...
You're asking a good question. So the Shulchan Aruch says, and it comes from a Gemara in Zvachim, Rabbi Moshe Zedek, you need to know this, for Koyanim. Because we have similar halachas for Koyanim, for Chatzitza, where it says they have to stand on the floor in the Beis HaMikdash barefooted. No Chatzitza. So the Shulchan Aruch says, the Gemara says, what would be, for example, if you have a painter? Now, a painter has forever got blobs of paint on his hand. He's always got blobs of paint. So even though a regular person doesn't want a big piece of paint, I'm talking about, by the way, something, a piece of paint, not just a mark, a stain. So the Shulchan Aruch says, the Gemara says, then we would not say botla daita. Why? Because then you can't consider her crazy. There's definitely a well-known, established group of people called painters. Or the Shulchan Aruch talks about somebody who's a sheikhet. A regular person, it would bother them tremendously to have a blob of blood on their hand. You'd clean it off. Hygiene reasons, aesthetic reasons, whatever it may be. But a sheikhet wouldn't be makbid. Maybe on Erev Shabbos he'd want to clean himself up. But a sheikhet, have you ever seen a sofa? You can always tell who's a sofa. Their fingernails are always black. Why? They're dealing all day with inks. They can't clean it. It doesn't bother them after a while. Finish. So that wouldn't be chatzitza, because that's not called botla daite. Botla daite is when you're doing something abnormal, but if there's an established group in the world, albeit they're by no means the majority of the world, but nobody would say that painters are abnormal. Most people happen not to be painters, but painters, a sheikhet, etc., etc. I'll tell you where this is very negia. Very frequently asked question. If you have a woman who is a ganenet, she's running a kindergarten for children, and she has to go to the mikveh, and she tells you she's got paint all over her hands. Would we say that somebody who's a professional ganenet, she's always got paint and wax and what all types of interesting things over her hand? That even a regular person definitely would bother them. Maybe she's like a sheikhet or a painter. Kornfeld asked me not so long ago, very, very complicated question in the Shulchan Aruch by a woman who has lice. So he told me he was asked by a ganenet who's got lice for 20 years, but she doesn't even bother checking anymore. She's given up. She's got a gun, 20 kids, there's always somebody who's got lice. So would you say that if she went to the mikveh and found lice, it's not a chatzitza because she's not makbid? I said, my humble opinion, I would say it is a chatzitza, and he agrees. Because even amongst ganenets, I don't think we would say it's a normal thing for ganenets not to be makbid on lice. If you want to say a painter is not makbid on paint, or a sheikh is not makbid on dam, fine, that's a gemara. But to say that it's a normal group in the world called ganenets who don't care about lice in their hair, I don't think that's quite fair. That would be a chatzitza. Anyway, back to our subject, you see that this concept of bot lo daita isl kol adam is extremely negative. And that's why in this shaila on the Friday night with a woman who had glue on her fingers, I said, I'm sorry to tell you, she has to go back to the mikveh. 11 o'clock at night by the time she went to 11:30 at night. There's no choice. Even though it's very small, but you're definitely makbid. And again, I don't really need to know whether you in particular are makbid. I just need to know that most people in the world are makbid, and therefore whatever you say is irrelevant. Because even if you say, no, I'm weird, I'm not makbid, sorry, bot la deity is look alone. This is one of the proofs that you have to be normal. One of the proofs. Bot la deity. Okay, let's go on to the next subject. Gufa.
Wait a minute, isn't this the question of falafel, whether you should bench?
That's what Mara says, you don't bench. Whoever, nobody drinks a suda out of wine. And what happens if you do? You're crazy. That's not called mozin. We're not going to change the definition of mozin because you've got one with sugar. I'll ask you a question. What happens if a person says, I'm so hungry that I ate my phone? What brocha rishona do you have to make? The Rav probably will ask him, is that kosher phone or non-kosher phone? The real answer is, it's not food. Yeah, but I enjoy eating my phone. But say this, it doesn't become food because you happen to do something which is abnormal. Botla deitze, it's a kolodo. So over here, to drink wine is not abnormal. To make an entire suda out of it, that's really abnormal.
Nowadays they do have though, they have the big wine tastings.
Wine tasting, again, it's not to fill you up to have a whole party, to have a suda.
You go around, you drink 200...
But nobody came home. Nobody came home and told their wife, it's okay, my dear wife, you don't have to make supper this evening. Why? Because I went to a wine tasting party. So they say the story, somebody came home during the Omer, said to his wife, no, what's for supper tonight? So she said, well, yesterday we had chicken. I'll call upon him. Okay.
But why did he want
Eliyahu HaNavi
then?
No, he's just saying, if things will change in the future, fine, we'll see, we'll talk to Eliyahu HaNavi, maybe things will change. Maybe Eliyahu HaNavi will tell us in the future, there is now a new definition of Mozain, and therefore our definition, and in turn, the Brocha, the Halacha has changed. But until that's happened, says the Gemara, Bot L'Daita, Itzel Kol Adam. Ah, you'll tell me, but I found one case where somebody was Kiveya Suda on wine, but say that doesn't change the definition of mozain based on one person who's doing something that's considered abnormal. Okay, Zot the Gemara, Gufa. Gufa always means we're going to go back, let's re-examine the evidence. We mentioned before, Omar Rabbi Yudah Mashmul, Vachinam Rabbi Yitzhak, Omar Rabbi Yechanan, Shemen Zayis, Mavarchin, Olav, Boirei, Prihoitz. Shemen Zayis, Mavarchin, Olav, Boirei, Prihoitz. And we came to the conclusion that the reason why you do so is because it doesn't really fill you up. Wine might fill you up, albeit you don't be kiveh suda on it, but shemen is not something that fills you up, and therefore you just make a bracha of Boirei Prihoitz. Says the Gemara, Heichidomi. What does Heichidomi mean? How so? What exactly is the case? What are you talking about? Tell me the case. Tell me exactly what happened. If you literally mean that he sat and drank a cup of Shemen Zayis. Says the Gemara, Uzuki Mazikle. It damages him. That's a non-healthy thing. And therefore what? So what if it damages him?
You
wouldn't say brach anyway. Very, very interesting, by the way. I know we've veered off a little bit today, but very, very interesting. It's said in the name of Rabbi Eliashiv, and I say it extremely hesitantly because, as we know, many, many halachas that are paskan that are said in the name of Rabbi Eliashiv don't necessarily have a solid source. But it's said in the name of Rabbi Eliashiv that the oil with which you light your Chanukah candles should be ro'u la'achila, should be edible. I've been asked this many, many times every Chanukah, do I have to be makbid to buy olive oil which is ro'u la'achila? Where are they coming from? Because it's said in the name of Rabbi Eliashiv, that you should be particular, that it should be ro'u l'achim. So I once asked this question to my Rebbe, Reb Nosson Kopschitz. And I said, do you have to have shemen for Chanukah, which is ro'u l'achim? On the spot, he told me, I don't understand how you can possibly say that you need ro'u l'achim. Which oil are you supposed to light from, l'chatchila on Chanukah? Shemen Zayis, a mafurush gemara in brachas of lamad heyam abeis. Shemen Zayis damages you. It's not ro'u l'achila.
Olive oil is used for cooking. It's not to drink it, but
right. That's the thing.
It's damaging a little cup of it.
So you could say that might be the yishuv. The ro'u l'achila doesn't mean to drink as is. To take a whole cup of olive oil and drink it means you can put it in your food.
Right.
Maybe that's what Rabbi Yashav meant. But he was very dismissive of this whole halacha, besides the fact he says he doesn't know any source for it. But how can that be the case? If you have to lie with olive oil, Mufurash Gemara, the olive oil damages. So everybody here is suggesting, no, it's not a contradiction. It damages if you drink a whole cup of it. But if you add it to food, many people do that. It's very good for adding spice or flavoring.
Perhaps you could say that if you have
like vinegar,
in order to say a bracha, you have to drink a revias or.
So with regard to a bracha, where you can't just have a little. Yes, the truth is not actually true. It's not true. It's actually not true. To make a bracha rishoina, there's no shiur. Bracha achroina, there's a shiur. So maybe Ramnosen Kopsch's question is a good shaila. Unless you tell me that, no, at the end of the day, nobody sits and drinks a small amount, even a small amount of olive oil.
They do.
They do?
People taste. Like, we have a client, and they put out different flavors, and they have tastings.
One of them is oil?
Yeah, olive oil.
Bokla dietates the color of them.
Well, they have different flavored olive oils, and they sit there with little shot glasses, and they taste them.
Yeah, but that's only to know whether it'll be a good flavoring. They're not going to market it as a new oil drink. So if that's the question. Now, what does ro'u l'achila mean? Does ro'u l'achila mean ro'u l'achila as is? Or ro'u l'achila, it's good to be a good flavoring? Okay, that's a good Chanukah shayla. Fine. We're burning different candles today. Different type of fire. Says the Gemara, so what do you mean? What exactly is the case? How can you tell me that if you drink olive oil, you say Bore Priyoed? What's the case? If it means you literally filled a cup of it and you drank it, it can't be. That's mazik. If it's mazik, you don't make any bracha at all. Says the Gemara, how do I know it damages? With Tani, because we have a brace and it says as follows. Hashoise shemen shol trumo. If somebody drinks oil of truma, now we know, unless you're a kohen, you're not allowed to eat or drink anything that is truma. And if you do, what happens? So there's really a double halacha. You pay what's called keren v'choymesh. Now, the keren means the initial capital. Why do I pay that back? That's nothing to do with the fact that it's truma. If I drink anything of yours without permission, I have to pay back. That's regular hilchas gezela. But the choymesh, the additional fifth, is a specific truma halacha. So it says there that if I drink your shemen shol truma, what do I pay? Meshale mesa keren. I've got to pay the keren. Why? Because at the end of the day, I've stolen from you. But ve'einoi meshale mesa choymesh. I do not pay the choymesh. The knas. Why not? Look at Rashi. Oyezuki mazik legufe. It's damaging to his body. Ve'ein zu achila. And this is not, therefore, considered achila. Shetu'una brocha. That would require a brocha. Tegab a brocha, because with regard to a brocha, v'ochalto ksiv. Because it says in the Torah, v'ochalto. So I see that what is the requirement? It has to be classified as eating. Whatever damages you is not eating. Now, Moirai v'raboisa, we have to remember this Rashi. Because this Rashi is quoting which pasuk? V'ochalto. That's talking about the brocha achroino. We're discussing The Bracha Rishayna, who says it has the same parameters? Rashi is making the jump and is comparing the two. If it says with regard to the Bracha Achrayna, the after Bracha, V'ochalta, so the same would be true for the Bracha Rishayna. Bracha Rishayna needs eating. If it damages you, it's not considered eating. Therefore, what says the Gemara, the Tanya, we have learned in a brisa, says Rashi, delav bar achila, who, that it's not considered edible. Hashoyse shemen shel truma b'shoigeg, Rashi adds. Why does Rashi add the word b'shoigeg? Because if you eat truma b'meizid, you don't pay the keren v'chomesh, you have misa b'dei shomayim. Mishale misa keren, you'd pay the initial capital. Why? Kashar mazik, just like any other person who damaged eschaveiroi, b'mamaynoi, with regard to his money. There's also a chaymesh, but in this case you would not pay the chaymesh. Ve'ein mesham chaymesh, why would you not pay the chaymesh? The gab chaymesh, again, achila, quote unquote, ksiv. The word achila is written, because it says, ve'ish ki yoichal kodesh b'shgoga, prat lemazik, as opposed to damaging it. If I damage truma, what's the halacha? How much do I have to pay?
Keren.
If I eat truma, however, keren v'chemesh. So I need the achila, because there's quite clearly ki yoichal, and we have a drasha prat to exclude mazik. See, if that's the case, go back into the braisa. If you drink shemen shel truma, you will pay the keren. You will not pay the chaymesh. Hasoch shemen shel truma. What does soch mean? If you smear shemen, as they did in the times of the Gemara, maybe even nowadays, as a type of benefit to the goof, then you pay the keren. Umashalem is a chaymesh. Why would you pay the chaymesh? You've benefited. I thought we need eating. The answer is we have a principle called sicha. Kishtia. Smearing is like drinking. Not getting involved in the whole shailas now. That's why there's a very complicated question on Pesach, the soaps and things like that. Do they need a heksha? Nobody's planning on eating the soap. But sicha, maybe it's kishtia. So it has chametz content. Maybe that's an issue. Does woman's makeup need a heksha on Pesach? Nobody's eating the makeup. But if you smear it, maybe that would be considered kashtia. Maybe it would need a heksha. It's a whole discussion. But al chaponim, back to our subject. Therefore, if I drink it, that's not considered achila. Why? Why is the Gemara quoting this braisa as a proof?
Because it's damaging.
That it's damaging. It's not considered edible or eating. So therefore, we don't really understand what does it mean that shemen zayis, you make a brocha of, what does that mean? Well, you took a cup and you filled it and you drank shemen zayis, can't be, that's damaging, it's not considered achila at all, you wouldn't make any brocha. So we don't really know what the case is. So we will hold it over here, and there is Hashem Yisbarach, on Sunday we'll reconvene.
Anything like soap and so on.